16. Somewhere in the Scottish Highlands, Britt and Gwen hovered slightly above the eye of the dragon storm. They attempted to count the dragons, which was a challenge, since they were mostly identical. Two had horns, the rest didn't. Aside from that, they were essentially 10 of the same animal, flying in a circle. Just when they both thought they had a handle on the dragon's formation and a general idea of where to start counting and where to stop, the dragons broke their pattern, diving to the ground. They had focused so fully on the dragons that neither of them had bothered to look directly down at the ground. They finally did look, just in time to see a clump of people huddling beneath large wooden shields while being periodically doused in flames. The dragons couldn't turn quite sharply enough to stay permanently within fire breath range of the poor people on the ground, so instead they each chose an orbit that brought them in close enough to attack, then took them far enough afield to be out of the path of the next dragon. Each dragon could muster about 3 good puffs of flame, and among them they kept the poor saps with the shields under constant assault for nearly 15 seconds. Which might not sound like a long time, but to someone attempting to fight back fire with a piece of wood, 15 seconds is an eternity. The intricate looping patterns the dragons traced as they wove in and out of range, while staying out of each other's way, seemed almost mathematically perfect. Britt and Gwen knew that the people under the shields had to be terrified and in agony, but were not in any direct danger from the dragons. Also, the realization that the dragons were attacking something, then the shock at what they were attacking, then the surprise at how they were attacking, all came in such quick succession that it would have left any witness momentarily stunned.
"Such an interesting mix of animal instinct and computer precision," Britt the younger said. "It would be fascinating to keep a few to study, if it didn't mean risking all life on Earth." "The age-old lament of the scientist," Gwen said.
The dragons had done their worst and ascended to regroup for another run. As the dragons flew back to a safe altitude, Britt and Gwen noted that the lead dragon and the last dragon were the two with horns. The mound of shields rose as if a single piece of wood. Then the individual shields tilted, lowered, and virtually disappeared, revealing 4 large men. They all looked like variations on the same theme, as if they had been assembled at random from the same assortment of available parts. Long hair, trim beards, thick muscles, and kilts. They stood back to back, unaware of the sorceresses directly above them, instead focusing on the dragons. A man with flowing blonde hair lifted his sword, looked at the surface of his shield, and shouted,
"The shield's held again, my friends! I doubt they can withstand another pass, but take heart, for we shall die protecting those we love. I regret that I'll never see my beloved Coira, nor little Effie and Nessa again, but knowing that they will live is enough!"
A man with dark red hair and a bright red face hoisted his sword and bellowed,
"Aye, Jack, I too take great solace in knowing that my sacrifice has made possible the escape of my dear wife and our wee baby daughter, for I love them far more than I love life itself. I only hope they know it."
A noticeably stouter man with brighter red hair and a darker red face switched his battle axe to his shield hand, and used his now free hand to grasp the other man's shoulder.
"Morag knows, Kyle. Morag knows. And when Rati's old enough, Morag'll tell her. That woman adores you beyond the ability for words to express it. I know this, because while I am here to fight for my betrothed, the lovely Donalda, a good, good woman, far better than I deserve. The truth is that I too love Morag, and have since we were all wee. I would never act on it, for I love you like a brother. But I cannot help how I feel, and now that we face certain death, I want you to know the truth."
Kyle put his hand on the other man's as it clutched his shoulder and said,
"Wesley, I know. I've always known. Everybody's seen the way you look at Morag, even Morag. but we knew you were far too good a man to ever say a word, no matter how painful it was, and we respect you all the more for it."
Jock laughed.
"Truth be told, all of the men in the village have been in love with Morag at one time or another."
Kyle shouted,
"Don't I know it?"
All of them laughed, save for one, a black-haired, hulking figure clutching a battle axe with both hands as he surveyed the sky with murder in his eyes.
"I've never loved Morag,"
he said in a somber, determined tone.
"Bonnie though she's. No offense, Kyle."
Kyle said,
"None taken, Mungo."
Mungo shook his head.
"Before I know what marriage, or love, or even my own name was, I've known who I wanted. She was skinny and pale, and had hair like a thicket bush. But the first time I laid eyes on her, I knew she was for me. The five greatest days of my life are the day Grisel agreed to be mine. The days that Shonog, Ginny, and my boy Torquil were born. And today..."
The man turned to face the others and held his battle axe high above his head.
"For today, I die. I die fighting. I die fighting for a good cause, with good men by my side. Today we give our last, here on the ground our fathers left us, to defend the lives of those we hold most dear. It's a good death, the best death possible. I'm proud, so proud to share it with you, men I love like brothers. The dragons may kill us and burn us and eat us, but we will fight back their fire, and we will dodge their teeth and wrestle with their tongues and kick them in the tonsils on our way past. And if they swallow us, by God, we will do our best to give them indigestion while we're in them, on the trots, on our way out."
The men all shook their weapons in the air and let out a blood-curdling shriek that echoed across the landscape. Gwen said, "Eesh, after all that, it almost seems like a shame to save them." The dragons had circled several times during the men's heartfelt pre-martyrdom chat and were just starting to descend for another coordinated attack. Gwen threw herself wand first into a steep dive, got just ahead of the lead dragon, and created the destructive portal they'd taken to calling the goal directly in its path. The first dragon never had the time to even try to avoid the goal and sailed through it like a perfectly executed free throw. The second dragon attempted to pull up far too late and only managed to run headfirst into the rim, then flop limply through the goal, carried by its own momentum. The third dragon spread its wings wide and flapped them furiously in a desperate effort to keep from flying into the goal. Of course, it didn't know that the goal would kill it. The dragon had no idea what the goal even was. But that alone was a good enough reason for any creature with an instinct for self-preservation to want to avoid flying into it. It flailed in the air, attempting to maintain its altitude, like the world's largest hummingbird. The seven dragons behind it all had time to simply adjust their dive paths to avoid both the goal and the panicked dragon, which they did, neatly zipping past on every side. Because the dragons had been in a dive when Gwen placed the goal, instead of being in front of the third dragon or even beside it, the goal was actually beneath it, canted at an angle like a ramp. The dragon managed to avoid it, arresting all of its momentum, and actually started to inch away before Brit flew directly in front of its face and emanated a blinding flash of light that stunned the dragon just long enough for it to lose altitude and fall through the goal. Brit said,
"Three down."
Gwen started to respond, but got distracted by the sound of the men below cheering. She looked down at them and managed to smile for nearly a full second, before shouting,
"Crap!"
The destruction of three of their number had thrown the dragons into disarray, They reacted by each flying in a graceful arc, redirecting their momentum into paths that all converged back on the men on the ground. Gwen and Britt knew that the dragon's false fire would hurt, but couldn't kill the men directly. Indeed, the men had survived a direct assault while they watched, but the men had anticipated that attack and braced themselves. This time they had their shields down and didn't seem aware that the dragons were converging on them with intent to try to turn them into brisket. When the fire hit, the men would probably panic, and Britt and Gwen knew from recent experience what could happen when armed men in tight quarters panic. Gwen dove toward the men. She watched as the looks on their faces transitioned in quick succession from elation that two sorceresses were helping them, to fear when one of the sorceresses shot toward them without warning, to confusion when they felt their weapons strike the inner wall of the invisible force field she had created. Then she couldn't see them at all because of all the fire and dragons in the way. Gwen prayed she'd made the force bubble small enough. During the fruitless hours the wizards had spent attempting to craft anti-dragon weapons, they had discussed the uses and limitations of force fields. Gwen knew that she had probably saved the men quite a bit of pain, but there was a small chance, depending on how low the dragons had flown by, that she had trapped several armed men in a confined space where they would be blind and in excruciating agony. She placed a second force field around herself just in time to save herself a light roasting. She couldn't see anything beyond the fire, but she heard the sound of the men screaming at the tops of their lungs.
"Normally, I'd take that as a bad sign," she thought. "But with these guys, I can't be sure."
The fire surrounding Gwen subsided. She saw the underbelly of the dragon that had attacked her as it streaked past. It flew away from Gwen and gave no indication that it ever intended to turn back. Below, another dragon flew over the men, raining fire down upon them for as long as it could, before also gaining altitude and flying away as fast as its wings could manage. The men shrieking and shouting had continued unabated through the attack. Now they looked up at Gwen and continued yelling, their mouths open wide, their eyes bulging. She still couldn't tell if she'd helped them or made their situation much worse. It wasn't until the one called Jock cried,
"Gods be praised! We're saved, lads! Her magic has saved us!"
Their shouting got even louder as Gwen dropped to the ground in front of them. As the cheering died, Kyle said,
"Praise be! I may yet live to once more see my beloved Morag."
Leslie said,
"Aye, and if fate allows it, I too may live to once more see your beloved Morag."
Kyle snarled,
"Come here, you wee bastard!"
and tackled Leslie. The two rolled, grunting on the ground. The other two men watched and laughed instead of trying to break them up. After a spirited tussle, the fighting men started laughing and let go of each other, then sat up in the grass. Kyle said,
"You're a true friend, Leslie. I could never hurt you."
Leslie said,
"You're a true friend, Kyle, and you're right, you can never hurt me. I'd wallop you if you tried, and we both know it."
"You think so? Then let's see, you arrogant bastard!"
Kyle dove at Leslie, and the two rolled on the ground, fighting again, accompanied by a fresh hail of laughter from their friends. Britt the younger landed next to Gwen and said,
"I managed to take out another dragon, then they all scattered. We have six left to get."
Gwen said,
"Cool."
They watched and listened to the fight for a moment. Britt asked,
"They okay?"
Gwen shook her head, chuckled, and threw her hands up to signal her uncertainty.
"I guess. They seem to be trying to determine exactly what kind of bastard Leslie is, arrogant or wee."
Britt said,
"I see."
Gwen and Britt stood and watched the two men struggle, the sounds of their grunting and cursing almost drowned out by their friends' laughter and cheers. Britt said,
"Those kilts really allow for a lot of mobility for the, lower extremities, don't they?"
Gwen winced.
"Yes. Mobility. And visibility. Unfortunate angle, though.
Agreed.
Gwen could barely discern a high-pitched, warbling sort of sound over the fighting and the laughing. She lifted her hand, saw that the call was from Jeff, then turned to Britt and said,
I'm getting a call. You want in on this?
No, I think I'll watch the fight. I'll let you know if you miss anything. Gwen took to the air and put 50 yards or so between herself and the fight so she'd be able to hear and speak in a normal tone. She answered the call.
Hello, Jeff. What's up?
The hazy image of Jeff's head floating in her palm said,
Hey, Gwen. I'm sending you something. Please look up.
Above, just in front of Gwen, a rolled piece of parchment appeared. She caught it easily.
It's a map, Jeff explained. It's useless for finding your way to the nearest town or anything, but it'll tell you where the dragons you're after are. Some of the teams had a hard time finding them.
Really? I wouldn't think it'd be hard to spot a dragon.
I know, right? I don't get it either. But apparently some of the dragons were hiding.
They're as big as a house, and shoot fire. Where did they hide? Inside a volcano?
I don't know. They asked for a map, and I made them one.
Who, specifically, asked for the map?
I shouldn't tell you that.
Meaning it was Martin.
I didn't tell you that!
No, you didn't.